Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us for Mito Action's podcast, Energy in Action. I'm Kyra Mann, CEO of Mito Action, and I'm your host. Here on Energy in Action, we talk all things Mito, and I'm glad you're here to learn and be part of our community. Joining me today for this episode of Energy in Action is Christy Balcells, who is the Associate Director of Patient Advocacy and Public Policy for Zogenix Pharmaceuticals. Welcome, Christy.
Thank you, Kyra. So excited to be able to chat today.
Absolutely. So today we're going to talk about all things empowerment, and Christy's going to share with us 10 tips on being a great advocate, not only for yourself if you're affected by a mitochondrial disease or if you're the caregiver for a loved one with a mitochondrial disease. So, but before we kick off that conversation, Christy, why don't you just give us a little bit of background about your connection to the mitochondrial disease community, because you have a very deep connection to this community.
Yeah, so this is kind of a full circle moment, in fact, because my daughter Ava turns 18 at the end of this month, and she has Lee syndrome, which is a type of mitochondrial disease. And when she was just diagnosed, there was an opportunity to have her followed in Boston, at that time at Tufts, Mass General, and Boston Children's. All were establishing mitochondrial disease programs. And so we moved to Boston so that I could have access to care for Ava. And there was just this small group of families that were kind of kicking around this idea of thinking that there should be a support organization for people with mitochondrial disease. And some of the physicians were instrumental in that. And it was like, with my background, I'm a nurse and I have a background in community and public health and a master's in public health. And before my daughter Ava was born, I'd been involved in community needs assessments and programming. And so it was like that was right in front of me. And I was like, I'm helping you do this. So we started Mito Action back in 2006 when my daughter was just 2 years old. And here we are now. It's 2022. She's almost turning 18. And I am currently supporting pharmaceutical companies, specifically Zogenix, with their TK2D mitochondrial disease pipeline, but just really honored to have been involved in some degree of patient advocacy, disease awareness, education, and as you mentioned, empowerment now for, you know, over 15 years.
Yeah. I mean, Christy, you truly are a champion for this community, always have been. And we're so lucky that regardless that your journey has evolved, that you always come back to this community to give back and to support and to share your expertise and your wisdom, not just to benefit your own daughter, Ava, but all of the community. And so we're grateful to you for that. So thank you for that.
It's truly been like a gift in my life as well. And it's kind of why I wanted to talk about this topic today, because it takes a lot of bravery and courage to be your own advocate, to take control of what might feel like an impossible or devastating situation or diagnosis, even to look to others to make it better. And so that's part of why I wanted to talk about this idea of being your advocate, being empowered today, because if I hadn't done that, then I wouldn't be able to be in this position right now. But every step that I took, as you mentioned, was both for Ava, but it was also because I kind of would feel like if I don't do it, who will?
Right.
And we have to make this better for the next family who's like me. Like, this shouldn't be this hard, you know? And so now when I look around at this big community and how much progress has been made, I mean, it's really overwhelming, and we should be very proud as a community of the progress we've made. So when everyone gets involved and serves as the advocate, it makes a big impact. So that's why I want to talk about that today.
Well, and I think the important message is that no matter where you are in the journey, no matter what skill sets you have or your level of comfort, there's something that everyone can do to make an incredible difference. So let's kick that off. So let's start. You've got 10 tips to share with us.
Okay. I've got 10 tips, and I wouldn't say they're in any particular order. All right. So, but these are what I think that any of us who either are living with mitochondrial disease or taking care of a child or a family member or someone that you love with mito can do. So number one is to become an expert in your own disease and diagnosis. And the first step in that is to get an accurate diagnosis. Now, there was a period of time as little as 5-10 years ago when that type of advice would, you know, land differently, because genetic testing at that time was thousands of dollars. It was really difficult to find a specialist who might be able to order and interpret that testing. Mitochondrial disease genetic panels were very new. And so a lot of people would have a presumed mitochondrial disease, but not have a specific diagnosis. And I can just share with you, having been in that patient advocacy seat for a long time, that without a specific diagnosis, a lot of doors are closed,
right?
And it's really frustrating. Doors to clinical trials are closed. Doors to coverage from insurance are closed. Doors to opportunities to maybe feel like you were part of a registry or part of something specific are closed. Doors to even having access to things like eligibility are closed. So if possible, it's really important, I think, step one is to get an accurate diagnosis. And I'm really excited because it's been a real joy for me to see that Zogenix has sponsored a no-cost genetic testing program that now has put that power of asking for genetic testing into the patient's hands, and that, and using really cool AI technology to be able to help differentiate who is most likely to have mitochondrial disease. That's just a really cool program that we are very excited about that is helping the entire mitochondrial disease community reach that genetic diagnosis. But once you have your diagnosis, it's on you to become an expert in that diagnosis. So learn about your disease. And that can be hard because it can be overwhelming. I mean, I remember when my daughter was diagnosed and we got the part about her having pyruvate dehydrogenase complex deficiency. And, you know, couple days go by and then you start Googling. Now, granted, this was a long time ago, but you Google, and then I'm reading just all of this stuff about progressive organ failure and yes, scary. And I was like, oh, I don't want to know anything else. Like, no more. Don't want to know anything else. I think early in the diagnosis, you're hungry for information, but it's really overwhelming. But just like if you were going to school for something, right? It might take you years to become an expert. Allow yourself the time and become an expert in your own disease and diagnosis, because no one is invested in it like you are, whether that be for your child or for yourself.
Yeah, I almost wish we could tell the rare disease community that the first thing you should search is not necessarily just the disease, but patient advocacy for your disease. Because then at least you know you're going to be directed to someplace that, like MitoAction, that has taken the time to digest the information for you and provide it in a more positive light and kind of help you to take that first deep breath, not be overwhelmed, and say, okay, let's understand what we're dealing with. Let's look at our options and let's move together forward and not have all of those scary things coming at you right out of the gate.
You know, sometimes people will unexpectedly ask you, oh, what is that?
Right.
And it's important, you know, just like if you had something you were really proud of, you would know how to explain it. So think of it that way. Like this diagnosis, like it or not, it was a gift that was placed in your path to help you grow and to have a purposeful journey, as challenging and as hard and as heartbreaking as it is. So be able to talk about it. And so that's my number one tip, is to be an expert in your own disease and diagnosis.
Yeah. Can we go back? Let me ask a question about the diagnosis process, Christy. And what would be your recommendation? We have so many patients in our community that are struggling to get a diagnosis, and they may not have access to a mito expert. And even if they do, they usually can't be seen unless they already have that diagnosis. So what would be your recommendation to those families that are struggling to find maybe a physician that will order the right testing, or who may just not know what test to order? How can a patient take control of that situation, educate themselves, take that information back to their physician and say, here's where we need to go, here's what we need to do? What would be your recommendation for that?
So that's a great question, because genetic testing isn't like a black and white. Like if you've had a you know, a CBC at your doctor for part of your annual checkup, and things are either normal or not, or they're high or low. And so you can just see like, oh, we checked leukocytes and they were normal. But with genetic testing, it's not like that. So even when we say there's a disease, like, oh, there's a genetic disease and it's a TK2D disease, then that doesn't mean that on a genetic test that there's going to be just like a list of mito diseases, and then one of them is TK2D and it's going to say abnormal. Instead, what happens is there's lots of genes that can have mutations, and those genes and genetic mutations at many different places that potentially are associated with this one genetic syndrome. And so that genotype then has multiple genetic mutations, which require a geneticist to interpret. So I say all that because it's not like you can do like a mail order test per se, not have any physician interpretation at all. Now, what's really exciting is that we've come a long way, and there's a new website actually called maybemito.com that has three different options on how patients and physicians can get genetic testing. So there's options where your doctor can order a genetic test to help find mitochondrial diseases and mitochondrial mutations. And then also this new no-cost genetic testing program sponsored by Zogenix with Probably Genetic that helps to identify mitochondrial diseases, where the patient can actually request that test. And then they have a follow-up telehealth visit to talk about the results if through the screening they are found to be most likely to have mitochondrial disease, and then go through that further genetic testing. So that's really exciting, that maybemito.com opportunity. Otherwise, I do think that going back to whoever your specialist is probably better than your primary care doctor. So if you have a neurologist, or you have a metabolic doctor, or you have an opportunity that you have, you know, a specialist, the specialist is more likely to be tapped into a healthcare system that has genetics in the, you know, institution. And I would say that talking to your specialist about the importance of genetic testing, and even just saying, you know, there's a lot of clinical trials in mitochondrial disease, and I want to make sure that I'm potentially evaluated for those if I'm eligible. So like I said, genetic testing, also the cost has come down quite a bit. So rather than this needle in a haystack approach, which costs, you know, a whole lot of money and is a little bit more broader sweeping, now it's more possible to narrow down that perspective. Now, having said that, some people still are doing whole exome sequencing. And so then, you know, for children in particular, that can be a great way to find all of the possible mutations. But I'm assuming that you're a person that doesn't have a genetic diagnosis or is trying to figure out exactly what's happening, in which case I would say step one, check out maybemito.com.
Okay, perfect. Great. And we'll also include that in the show notes, the maybemito.com, in case you want to go and check that out. And I would encourage you to do that if you're still on the diagnostic journey. All right, so we've got a diagnosis. We've learned about our disease. What's next, Christy?
All right, so now know your own baseline. This is interesting because baseline is a, you know, kind of a medical concept. And it's really important in clinical trials because we want to know at baseline where someone is. And so at baseline, that doesn't mean that you're always that way. It just means like if you averaged out your good days and your bad days, what is it like for you usually? And so you want to think about a good day and a bad day. What do I feel like typically, or what can I normally do? So for example, my daughter normally can sit at the table and feed herself. So that's her baseline. So I know that if she's too weak to be able to pick up her spoon, then she's not having a good day. And that may seem very simple and intuitive, but when you're describing your disease outside of what you know, then that baseline is different for every person, and it's really important. And it's also really important to know and document your baseline, because without that, how do you know when you might start a new vitamin supplement, or you might start something and add something to the mito cocktail, or even start a new treatment or therapy? How do you know if you're better or worse? Because with mitochondrial disease, that's characteristic of the disease, right? Is this that good day, bad day, you know? So sometimes it's a good day, sometimes it's a bad day, and it's hard to predict because the energy level changes so much. So looking into that to establish your baseline is really important. Taking a holistic approach, I think, also helps just because then you're not just thinking about a lab value or your, a specific thing like muscle weakness. You're looking at your whole self, like, do I have headaches? Do I have brain fog? Do I feel my legs are wobbly? You know, do I feel short of breath? Do I have trouble keeping my eyes open? Like those, the whole body is your baseline.
Right. And being able to, if you track that, you can look and see what is impact, one thing's impacting another, the correlation and things that may be impacting you that you may not have realized. I would share, as you know, MitoAction has a mobile platform that allows you to track that day-to-day journey. So all of your symptoms, all of the incidents, anything that may be happening in your day-to-day journey with mitochondrial disease, and it allows you to bring in your entire care team to have access to all of that information with reporting and, you know, correlation between disease symptoms. And there's also an incredible community where you can chat with other people in the mitochondrial disease community. So I would encourage people to use that as a means, you know, kind of as your daily diary of your disease with mitochondrial disease.
I love that. I love that.
And another thing, Christy, I would say is that, you know, mitochondrial disease is so unique from person to person. And not trying to compare your baseline to others to determine what is a good day and what is a bad day, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't know your own baseline and you're not comparing it to anybody else, this is for the purpose of being able to know when you go to the doctor and you say, my chest feels funny. What does that mean? Right? What does that mean? Whereas if you say, I used to be able to sit up and, you know, do some work on my computer and watch a show. And then now when I'm sitting up after about 15 minutes, my chest feels tight and fluttering. So see how that helps just help your healthcare providers, right? Do the work for you, because just saying my chest feels funny isn't enough information, especially with the complexity of mito. But really that's true for anybody. You've got to know your own baseline. You've got to know really the littlest things. I mean, I teach yoga and one of the things that yoga has taught me is pay attention to the littlest things, like what do your ankles look like? How do your feet feel? Are you able to, like, do you ever put your hands down and spread out all of your fingers? Does that cause you pain in your wrists? Like the littlest things, if you never do it, if you never pay attention, then you don't know when exactly something changed. And it's really important, I think, as we start to rely on patient-reported outcomes, which means things that patients say about their experience when they're in clinical trials or in research, that we need to practice just being more aware and more in tune with that as well.
Right. Exactly. That's really important. And again, I would encourage if you go to the MitoAction website and go to www.mitoaction.org/mobile, you can sign up to enroll and get started right away using that platform to track your journey with mitochondrial disease and share that with your clinician as well. Number three, Christy, what do you got for us?
Okay. I love this, because I struggle with this, which is how to ask for support and how to tell other people about your disease. I love this. So let's think about telling other people that you have mitochondrial disease or that your child does. I can share personally when I would tell people that I have gotten so much unwanted advice, you know, oh, have you tried essential oils or Benadryl or, you know, Reiki or what have you? And I'm like, it's a genetic disorder. I don't think that's going to help. But I appreciate, you know, years have gone by. I appreciate where it's coming from. So this is how I have learned to handle it. Use a script. Say something like, I'm going to talk to you about something that I'm dealing with for me or for my child or my husband or wife. And I don't need advice, and I actually don't need you to fix it for me. I just want to be able to share and know that you're there for me if I need you.
Right. You want to be heard.
And so, but you know, like sometimes we tell people like, yeah, I'm dealing with, I have, my doctor says that I have this. And then in the way of wanting to help, other people start to give you a bunch of advice, which I think actually just makes us feel bad. Because then it's like, it implies somehow that if we had just taken everyone else's advice, we should have been able to fix this problem. maybe it's not a problem to be fixed. It just is what it just is what it is.
Well, and I think it's really important what you said is to be very clear about what you need in the conversation, right? And set the tone that I'm not looking for advice. I'm not looking for you to solve this. I just need you to hear me and understand.
Right. And I think that when you can say that, like practice saying that, right? It sounds so easy, but practice saying, I'm going to say it again. I'm going to talk to you about something I'm dealing with, and I don't need your advice, and I really don't need you to try to fix it. I just want you to hear and listen to me so I know you'll be there for support.
I feel like that's a conversation I have often with my husband.
I mean, just learning to say that, right? Again and yeah. Again, it's setting some boundaries also. Like, hey, right. I'm not inviting you into my space to try to fix me. Like, let's take away this idea that I need to be fixed or that my right. child needs to be fixed. Let's just instead find a place where we can relate. We can be like authentic and support ourselves. So if you're having a struggling time, the second piece of that I would say is to, if you're going to ask for help or if someone asks, well, how can I help? What can I do? Stop saying, oh, nothing, you know, thanks. Give a couple options. So, you know, anybody who has kids knows that, you know, you say, do you want the broccoli or the spinach? But you don't say, do you want the Pop-Tarts or the broccoli? Right. And you don't say, what do you want? Because then they're going to say, I want the Pop-Tarts in general, right? So you, when you're asking for help, do the same thing. Well, anytime you were out and could pick up some groceries for me or maybe take my other child out for ice cream, that would be really awesome. It would really give me like an extra helping hand. But no pressure. Like, be clear about what's actually going to help you, because then you're more likely to build that circle of trust. And frankly, people don't know how to help people, particularly with rare diseases, because that's part of why we need to raise awareness, right? It's like to help people understand. So asking for this help in this very specific way, I just think is a more constructive way. But I really love using a script because it helps you feel a little less emotional. Maybe when you're not quite ready to deal with talking about your diagnosis, you can even just use that script so that it can help you be clear and not be creating like these emotional barriers. You know, this is part about also just having that, you have a circle of trust. You have the people that you're going to share more with and ask for help. And then you have the people where you're like, you're not, and that's okay. Like, just know who's in your circle of trust, because if there are people who are consistently reacting in a way that makes you stressed or makes you feel negative, then they need to be kind of put into the outer boundaries of your circle.
Well, it also opens up the door for you to even say, maybe you don't need them to do some action, right? Pick up groceries. Just share with one or two people about this disease and have a conversation about what mitochondrial disease is and help spread awareness. And that's something of value that a family member or a friend or, you know, can do to help.
Absolutely. And I'm going to talk more about that also on being that advocate that raises awareness.
So not being afraid to ask for help and being clear about what your needs are, setting the expectation and being upfront and honest about exactly what it is that you need. That's the best way.
And using that script, I feel like when you don't know what to say, it can help if you just kind of write out what you're going to say and just use that script to help you be prepared.
Absolutely. I love that.
Okay. So number four, ready?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. Number four is reflect like an interviewer to help explain your disease. So if you ever watched great documentaries or interviews where somebody asks a question and then the person being interviewed restates the question into their answer, right? That's like, I used to teach public speaking, and that's like one of the things we would teach is always restate the question in your answer. That way it could be a little soundbite. You know, when you have people who might say, why do you need a wheelchair? Then you can reflect the conversation in a way that helps explain the disease. So here's two possible answers. Why do you need a wheelchair? Well, I have a lot of weakness. Okay, that's one. Or why do you need a wheelchair? Well, I need a wheelchair because I have mitochondrial disease, which is a disorder of energy metabolism that causes profound and progressive muscle weakness. So some days I might be able to walk a short distance, but most days I need additional support in order to be able to be functional. And so that's why I use a wheelchair. Like, just allow the opportunity. This takes some confidence and practice to raise awareness about your own disease. It kind of all ties together, being an expert in your own diagnosis, but reflecting the questions to be able to tie that in. If you ever watch like really savvy, you know, interviewers with people who are more in business, I mean, they can get anything they want to say into an answer, right? Because they know how to pull it back in. So you're kind of doing that. Use that opportunity. So sometimes I'll take my daughter to the playground. She can't walk and she can barely crawl, but she likes to try to go up the little kid slide and then go down the little kid slide. And kids a lot of times will say, "What's wrong with her legs?" Because kids are more blunt, you know. And my daughter can't really answer that question. So that's when, and then as an example, like for my husband and I, if we're there, we'll reflect it back in that way. So we, you know, even to children, I think it's important to just help people start. You're raising awareness even to children. You're starting to be frank and honest and open about the experience of having a mitochondrial disease or rare disease, rather than just pretending that everything.
Yeah, I mean, I think the word that stands out in that is confidence, right? Having the confidence to say, this is what this is how it affects me, and it's not the end all be all, but this is what it is.
Well, and you know, if you practice that, like on the playground for your child, or, you know, I've seen adults who have mitochondrial disease who are incredible advocates because they use opportunities to positively talk about their disease. So they may be in the checkout line at Target and someone with well intentions might say something like, "Oh, did you get in an accident?" Because it may be the person's using a walker or, you know, some type of assistive device. And you could be like, "No," or you can use it as an opportunity to say, "Well, that's a good question, you know, because I'm using this because of muscle weakness. I'm using this because I have a rare disease called mitochondrial disease." You could check it. And that's, I mean, you could check it out. You could visit an organization, mitoaction.org, and learn more about it. I would appreciate that. I mean, you could just use this opportunity even in those situations, but that is really changing your mindset that rather than, again, I've got to be fixed, so I don't want to talk about it. And I have to, and this is a limitation. I mean, listen, none of us really expected to have mitochondrial disease. It's not fun. It's heartbreaking. It's devastating. That's why collectively we're all doing all the work we can to improve the landscape for therapies and improve the landscape for living with and dealing with the disorders.
Yeah. And the first time it might feel a little bit uncomfortable, but as you do that more and more, and like you said, as you change your mindset, it becomes more of a natural conversation. Okay. Number five.
Okay. Number five now is about records. Keep good records and use technology that's available to help you stay organized. With the advent of EMR, that's electronic medical records, there's some good things and there's some bad things. A good thing is that everything is somewhere in the electronic medical record universe. The bad thing is that it's likely to be in 27 different places in the electronic medical record universe unless you or compile it somehow or use existing technology to help you do that. And so, again, let's say that all of a sudden there was an opportunity to participate in a clinical trial or a research study or an opportunity to see a specialist or submit for a grant where you might get some special equipment. There's lots of reasons to have your medical advice together, not the least of which is that there would be an emergency, in which case you would need to have all of that accessible, right? And maybe you were away from home. Okay, so that's like obviously the number one reason, but there's lots of other reasons too. If everything is all over the place and you've got passwords on different places and you've got things in different locations and some things aren't complete and some things are printed out and some things are old and so forth, this is not useful. So let's make it a 2022 resolution to organize those medical records, and joining a registry like AllStripes is actually really useful. And I can give an example. I have joined AllStripes for the Lee Syndrome Research Registry, which is requested by Cure Mito and Mito Action. And so I, you know, enrolled my daughter in that registry. It was very easy, and I put in information about who her healthcare providers, and she's almost 18 years old, so there's been a lot of them. And because she's turned 18, we have to go through the process for her to, you know, have Medicare eligibility and all of that stuff. I found it really useful that I could go back into the AllStripes record and all her history was there. You know, so that was, they did the work for me, and that was great. And then I know in the Mito Action app as well, and Kyra, I'd love for you to chat about that. There's an opportunity to compile everything. So, you know, getting everything into one place, I think, is really helpful.
Yeah. So we're really excited to partner with AllStripes and Cure Mito on the Lays initiative. And the idea is that, like, right, when we make decisions to do something, we always want to make sure there's an immediate benefit to the patient community. And that was the same with the Mito Action app and the same thing with our partnership with AllStripes. So if you register, there's a MELOS initiative and a LAYS initiative, which are both live, and we'll have other diagnosis dates that are going to be rolling out over the course of the next couple of years. But if you register, as you said, Christy, it takes about 10, 15 minutes, you put in your physician information, and then they go and do the legwork and retrieve all of your medical records, your complete history. So tests, notes, admissions records, anything connected to you medically, they will pull all of that together for you and compile it in one place. And then you can take that information, download it from AllStripes, and add it to your Mito Action mobile app. And then you can share that information with anybody that you want to have access to it. So if you go to a doctor's appointment and you want to share the results of a blood draw, you can share that information right through the Mito Action mobile app with your doc. So it helps you organize. It helps give you control of what seems to be an overwhelming process. You know, I've always compared it to, you know, trying to take a lifetime of photos and scan them and organize them. Like, where do you even begin? So now in this instance, AllStripes is going to do that work for you. And then that medical information is, you know, they go through a detailed analysis of your medical records. And then that de-identified information can then be shared with clinicians and researchers as they're looking to develop therapies for mitochondrial disease. So In the act of getting your medical records, which is a huge benefit to the individual patients and families, you're also contributing to research and the development of therapy. So it's a win-win, and we encourage you to do that. If you want more information, you can go to the Mito Action website, to www.mitoaction.org/allstripes, and it'll give you all the information that you need to sign up for either one of those programs.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, we're so in sync with that. It sounds like we're like a paid advertisement, but I think this is true story about, you know, I did that just for kind of the, what I'm saying today, like to be a good participating advocate in the community. I enrolled my daughter and then it actually had a personal benefit. But let me mention also something that until I was working on the pharma and FDA and drug development side, I didn't really appreciate that. The information that patients and families provide that goes into registries, for example, is really important because in order to work with a regulatory agency, you have to be able to describe the disease. And you can't just say, okay, well, in this publication of this one hospital in this one city, here's a description of one thing that they did to describe the disease with their patients. It has to either be a clinical trial, which covers, you know, national or international representation of a specific diagnosis, or data that might be from a registry. Because we, on the drug development side, have the responsibility of condensing all of that and maybe putting together, for example, a graph or a diagram that illustrates the progression of disease. And so how can we do that if no one is participating? If you're not putting your information into a registry, then, and everybody has that attitude, or you're not participating in clinical studies because you feel like, well, maybe there's no direct benefit to me. Well, there is, because without everybody doing that, then we can't accurately describe and coalesce that information. And without that, I mean, it's a non-starter conversation from the regulatory side. They expect that. And so that's really a challenge in rare disease because of that participation piece. So I just ask our whole community to take that step, you know, where there's a chance for you to participate. I'm going to talk about that some more, but that specifically with keeping your records in one place and enrolling in places where everything goes into, you know, a registry or something like that, that's really useful. And then the fact that it can turn around in the MitoAction app, for example, and then it's easier for you in that emergency situation, because then it's easier for you can say, the last time we were here, the labs looked like this.
Exactly. We had a patient who uses the app share a story with us that she had gone to visit her mito specialist, and it had been about a year since she had seen her before and hadn't really documented, had taken some notes and things. And so she was trying to explain a situation that was going on with her child. And the doctor just was asking questions, just trying to understand. And she said, all of a sudden she felt herself feel flush and nervous and sweating because she felt like she was on a witness stand and she was being cross-examined. And because she didn't have all the information, she couldn't remember. She was second guessing. Well, did this happen first or did that happen first? Well, did it happen after, you know, she took this medication? And she just was completely flustered. It was an awful doctor's visit. And so she started using the MitoAction app and started tracking that data. And so before she went to the next doctor's appointment, she actually printed out all of the data points that she had been tracking since her last visit. She sent it to her doctor ahead of time. And so when she went into the appointment, right, that journey, her story had been transitioned into data points, and it gave the doctor all the information that she needed. And so it was a much more productive doctor's appointment. She walked away not feeling interrogated and walked away with a plan because now the doctor had the information that they needed and she wasn't, you know, felt like she was being interrogated. So it was a win-win all around.
Yeah, we love data, right? I mean, as medical professionals, we love data. We know what to do with that. So, you know, I think whenever you can speak the language of the people you're asking to help you, then you're going to win. So I love that story.
Absolutely. Okay, number six.
Okay, number six is stay informed. So that means if you're not already, or just go do it again to make sure, go to all the advocacy organizations. So MitoAction, UMDF, Cure Mito, International Mito Patients, Mito Canada, like all of them. Subscribe to the email, newsletters and email updates. All of that information, knowledge is power. You've got to make sure that they know to send it to you. Likewise, so only not everybody knows about this, but you can set up a Google alert for any keyword. And so if you just type in set up Google alert, then you can find easy instructions on how to do that. So you basically subscribe to get a daily or weekly digest, or what happens with mitochondrial disease is any more like periodic. Anytime that the keyword that you're interested in is new on the internet, then you get an alert about it. And so you can do that for the keyword mitochondrial disease. You could do that, let's say you have, you know, a POLG mutation. You could put POLG as your keyword. You could put, you know, something specific that is, you know, even of interest to you. So I love the Google alert because I've found in my experience, sometimes I know about things even before leaders in the field know about it, because I get the Google alert and I'll be like, hey, did you know there was this press release, or hey, there's a new clinical trial or whatever, because Google is telling me. I'm not a great detective. Google is doing the work for me. Once you do that, then you're just going to be so much better informed, and then you can share that.
it's a great way to stay connected to the information and knowing when things are posted. And like you said, it could be press releases, updates on clinical trials. It could be, maybe it's just a patient story. And maybe you may find that there's another family that lives nearby you that might be impacted.
Yeah, right. When there's a fundraiser in the news, you know, you get a Google alert about it. I mean, it's just a great way to be connected with literally no lift after you do your 5-minute sign up. So just type in how to set up a Google alert and then you're all set. And along those lines, then I feel like participation in support groups is vital and joining those groups. So there are lots of private Facebook groups for mitochondrial disease. Probably not all of them are the right fit, but some are. You should join those and participate. There are support groups that I think are vital, and you should join those and participate. And I just want to say that sometimes people say, well, I don't like going to a support group because I don't need support, or I don't want to talk about myself, or I don't want to think about my feelings or whatever.
Right.
Don't go for you. I mean, go for somebody else. Go for the people who might need you to be there to hear them.
Well, and MitoAction has a weekly support call every Friday that's open to anybody within the community, regardless of what your connection is. So whether you're a patient, you're a spouse, you're a parent, you're a grandparent, and it's a really great time to just share. And there are times where we don't even talk about mitochondrial disease. We just talk about whatever you need to talk about that day. You know, MitoAction facilitates, but it's the patient, it's the attendees' call. And so they can take it in whatever direction they want based on what they need that day, right? And sometimes, you know, we talk about meals and what's your favorite thing to make, or, you know, some, what's the next book you're reading. But to know that you have a community of people who understand what you're going through and can relate and can share and can provide, you know, tips and tricks, it makes all the difference in the world. And again, even if you want to just come and just sit and listen and not even talk, if you're interested in joining the MitoAction support groups, you can go to our website, and or the other option too is we have one-on-one phone calls. If a group is not your thing, but you need to know that there's somebody there, you can call our Mito411 support line as well.
Okay. Number 7, prioritize your symptoms and set small goals. So in the same way that we were talking about knowing your baseline, and in the example that you gave about feeling overwhelmed at an appointment, because, you know, you can say, I don't know, you know, we just don't seem to be doing as well, or I'm not feeling as well, or it seems like my child can't do as much, they need more sleep, they're exhausted. Then this is diffuse, right? That's like saying, I have a messy house. Okay, what about it is messy, and what are we going to do, right? So we have to break that down. I have a messy house, okay? I need to vacuum the kitchen, right? I need to clean the countertops. Like, start to break things down. So in the same way that you would do that if you were organizing or cleaning, apply that to your symptoms. Prioritize your symptoms, because realistically, friends, you're not going to be able to address everything that is a concern in every appointment. So it's really up to us as the patients and caregivers to learn how to prioritize what the problem is. So prioritizing your symptoms would be like, nothing has changed, but the thing that's bothering me the most right now is sleep. And then, you know, then be specific. I am having a lot of pain in my sleep. You know, my legs are hurting. I'm finding that I'm not able to sleep, and I wake up feeling, you know, this way, drained, with my head not feeling well and low energy and less than usual. So you can really prioritize your symptoms. And then when you set goals or keep track, so then that actually helps also. So for example, my daughter goes to physical therapy in the outpatient setting about once a month. And I started several years ago doing like a mini 6-minute walk test. So when 6-minute walk tests started to become of interest to FDA, I was like, huh, that's kind of a universal baseline that's needed in this neuromuscular disease community. So let me just explore that. So now my daughter can't walk, but she can use a walker, and she can't really walk 6 minutes nonstop in that walker, but she can take breaks. But we can measure in the walker how far she goes. So I started doing a mini 6 minute walk test with my daughter and the physical therapist every time she goes to PT. And I just keep a little note of it in my phone. And it's astounding because now I have years, like 5 years of 6 minute walk test data. And sometimes I feel like, oh my gosh, she's really declined. And then I do the 6 minute walk test and then I say to the PT, I think she's really declined. The PT will say, well, what was she this time last year? And I'll go back and I'll be like, oh, it's about the same. So maybe it's February, she's at her like lowest energy because it's cold and she's not able to swim in the pool and get as much, you know, like activity, and the days are shorter. So she's lower than she was in the summer. It's like what we feel is sometimes different than what is. And just having that information is really useful. So on the other hand, let's say that I do see that she's really declined in her ability to do that 6 minute walk test. Then when I go to the orthopedic doctor, I can say, I'm worried because there's something going on and I'm not sure what it is. And I can tell you that she's declined in her distance that she can walk in the walker during physical therapy. So again, and just using that data, I feel like these all tie together, but for this particular one, I'm talking about prioritizing your symptoms so that you can be really impactful. One more thing I would say about that also is that there's this really, I think, positive shift towards using more real world data and real world evidence in clinical trials and beyond. And one example of that is the individuals who were in the Stealth Biotherapeutics clinical trial who stayed on the open label extension. They were asked to take videos periodically while they were over a period of years staying in the open label period of the clinical trial. And those videos are really impactful because, again, let's say that on year one, you weren't able to walk up the 3 steps to get from your garage into your garage door into your house. But then at year two, you were able to walk up those steps. Well, that's only evidenced if you have the before and after video, right? And so using these videos, I almost feel like we could do like we've gone beyond selfies now, right? We have this opportunity to be really impactful in research just by taking videos. So that's a shift because it's not selfish, it's actually like data driven. We're tracking progress or decline, which is just as important to notice, because what we don't want to happen is the flip side. Like, you were able to walk up the steps to the garage, then 1 year later you're not, and then 2 years later you're not able to even get up out of your chair, but you didn't really realize that to talk about it or have any like demonstration about that until you were at a point where now we've lost like a lot of skills. And so using videos, I think, to help prioritize your symptoms and keep track is really, really useful. And I'm really excited about the future. We're not quite there yet, but it's in new FDA guidance to include real-world evidence and real-world data in clinical trials. And for larger disease populations, that's a little easier because, let's say, it's a blood pressure drug, everybody can wear an Apple Watch and you can just kind of monitor people's heart rates. But for, you know, rare diseases, it's got to get a little bit more nuanced. But I'm really excited about that because I think that's going to be really impactful in how we tell our story.
Yeah, exactly. And even through the MitoAction app, you can record video and audio. And so you have the ability, if something, you know, say, for example, a child has a seizure or, you know, something's happening with their eyes, they're having a weird eye movement, you can record that and send that to your clinician through the HIPAA compliant platform and say, see for yourself, this is exactly what's going on. And then, you know, kind of on the side of what you're talking about, Christy, it helps you keep things in perspective, right? Because when you're going through things, you're in it and you feel like you see the decline or you feel like things aren't going exactly as you think. But when you have that evidence to go back and compare, then you can take a deep breath and say, okay, it's really not what I think it is because I can see it. It's documented and it's recorded and it's here. And so that helps to take a bit of the anxiety away too, right? As you're going through this journey.
Absolutely. Okay, so we're ready to move on to number eight.
Number eight.
Okay, number eight is to be a micro influencer. And I have a couple of examples of how there have been some people in the community that have done this. Documenting your journey can be very therapeutic. It's kind of like journaling, you know, which is a mindfulness technique. But documenting your journey in some way can help other people to understand, so you're raising awareness. When you do it in a more day-to-day or week-to-week consistent fashion, hopefully it becomes less about the high and the low moments and the drama and more just about, like, this is what it's like. This is life. And there are highs and lows. So the balance gets to be there. And it's surprising, but really impactful. And I just want to say to all of you that are hesitant about documenting your journey, micro-influencers in disease states are really respected and powerful because you actually are making a difference about the disease. And you really are an influencer. So, you know, maybe we just think of influencers as the people who are, you know, most influential about the new facial products and lipstick or what have you. But micro-influencers in rare disease and mitochondrial disease, you're really making a difference in helping to raise awareness and educating others about the disease because this is real life. So when you post pictures or videos and you explain, you know, that really makes a difference. I mean, some great examples of this are, there's a inspiring to me woman with a YouTube channel called Life with a Vent, and she's so positive and so matter of fact and explains what it's like to have a feeding tube and a trach and a vent and to do her activities of daily living and the things that she does. And I just highly recommend that because she's telling the story in a way that is interesting to other people. It's not sensationalized at all. She's really raising awareness. Also, the Mito Girl on Instagram is raising awareness just by sharing her journey and personalizing that and being, you know, you can promote, if you will, like what the real life is of having challenges, for example, of saying like, look at that, the elevator's broken, two flights of stairs, don't think I'm going to that place today, right? I mean, that's like helping to validate the experience of other people also. And then TK2D mom, who runs the Facebook page and Instagram, Jeremiah Grayson, TK2D Warrior, is just a stellar example of positive awareness. I mean, I have to check what her most recent stats are, but she has on her Facebook page over 80,000 followers.
Yeah, I follow her, and it really becomes, it's like, it's almost like watching a reality TV show, right? She's documented Jeremiah's ups and downs, his challenges, his wins, and you become invested in that. And you want to know what's going on. You want to learn more about what it is he's dealing with. You want to learn more about TK2D. Social media has completely changed how we engage, how we tell stories. And it's amazing. So I would agree with you 1,000%, Christy. You know, use the power of social media to share your story and to build awareness. I think our community would really be surprised how invested people will become in continuing to follow them and understand what life is like living with a rare disease.
All right, we only have two more left. Number nine is to hire yourself as the director of communications. So whether you want to be or not, you are the new director of communications for yourself and your diagnosis or your child's diagnosis. And that means that you have to check in regularly with everyone on your team. That's your physician, that's your nurse, that's the research site, that's the physical therapist, that's the teacher, that's the community case manager. I mean, we can go on and on. And you have to provide updates or you are the director of communications, you have to check in and keep that communication line flowing. So rather than waiting till there's a problem because, you know, if your child's going to school or if you have a scheduled appointment or you haven't been to PT in a while, rather than waiting till there's a problem, just do some periodic check-ins. Sometimes in the healthcare system, that might mean actually as director of communications, you have to schedule a meeting. So think of it that way, rather than like, oh my God, I have to have an appointment. No, you're scheduling a meeting. If you're director of communications for this company, you're going to schedule a periodic check-in with your colleagues. Well, guess what? As director of communications of your disease, you need a periodic check-in with these colleagues. And so that might mean you have to schedule an appointment. And it might just be that you're scheduling an appointment just to kind of, again, have those touch points that allow you to continue to have a good positive baseline. So I think that when you know the names and you regularly establish relationships with people who are like the nurse in your most frequented specialist clinic, whether that's neurology or metabolics or whatever it is, the nurse is a very important person because they are going to be the ones who are going to help you if you need a letter for community eligibility or for school or for a piece of equipment or a prescription or something like that. The same with seeing the doctor regularly if possible, or having those relationships in your community as well as out, you know, into the field of the specialist you might see less often. Just be that director of communications, keep those check-ins and have everybody be updated so that if there's a problem, then you already have, you know, it's not been a year and a half since you've talked to people if there's a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I always equate it, Christy, to being the coach of the team, right? It's your responsibility to be able to rally the troops, and everyone on your team has a role to play, and you're making sure everyone's fulfilling their role and has the information that they need so that you can win the game. So very similar. Absolutely. I love that.
All right. We're on the last one, which is to share your voice, amplify your voice. Your experience is yours and valuable, and only you can share it. I think because of COVID, that's my suspicion, and maybe a little bit of frustration in the Mito community because we are trying so hard to help see therapy be approved, and it's just it's a really long road and hill to climb. There's a little bit of fatigue about participation in general, or a feeling like, well, what I have to say isn't that important, so I won't raise my hand to participate. Nothing could be further than the truth. Your voice is singular to you, and no one else can actually represent your experience than you.
Right.
So if you don't, that's a loss. Every single person needs to participate. And last year, I did some patient voice work with Zogenics on TK2D, and it was really impactful. And we had the opportunity to ask for volunteers who would just participate in a simple Zoom interview where we just asked three questions. What is it like to live with TK2D? Who's on your healthcare team? And what kinds of medical equipment do you rely on? That's it. And we had these conversations with eight patients and caregivers, and we were able to publish the findings and share it at the National Organization for Rare Diseases meeting, as well as the Wellcome Trust mitochondrial meeting in the UK. And just sharing the experience was really impactful in shaping how we understand this ultra-rare mitochondrial disease, TK2D. That's research, even though it wasn't a clinical trial. So sometimes while you're waiting for a clinical trial, or I hear patients say, well, I'm not eligible, or the clinical trial, I'm waiting for the clinical trial, or I've looked it up and there's no clinical trials for me. Well, clinical trials are critically important. So if there's a clinical trial, please, please raise your hand to participate and be willing to be part of the process, even if it's incredibly frustrating while we grow in this rare disease community to figure out how to best create clinical trials that are adaptable to the needs of our population and our rare disease and mito families. But there's other research also, participating in those patient voice, participating in registries, participating in surveys, participating in interviews. Those are all research opportunities, even though they might not have the word research in the title, and they're very, very important and impactful. And without that, you have a cascade of effects. You may not get funding for certain projects at academic institutions that are vital to contributing to mitochondrial research unless there's enough participation. Clinical trials can be prolonged so that the people who are waiting to get access to the therapy or in the randomized part are waiting to get started because there's not enough people who've enrolled. And if people don't participate in surveys, then you're getting bias from just the same few people who take the time to respond rather than being representative of our bigger community. It's really important. And the successful rare disease communities, like Duchenne's muscular dystrophy as an example, have a very engaged patient and caregiver community who raises their hand and participates. So that's what I'm going to end with, is to please participate in every opportunity that's available, because we as patients and caregivers, we are partners in this process. It's incredibly important.
We have a community-wide survey that we're going to be launching in just a few weeks. And what we're looking to understand is how we can better serve the community and what are the challenges that the community is facing. And we can't continue to adjust and make changes and expand our partnerships with pharmaceutical companies and go to the FDA on behalf of the patient community unless we truly understand what the needs are of the community. So along the lines of what Christy's saying, I would ask everyone to jump in and participate in that community service and tell us what you need, because that's why we're doing it. We're doing it because we want to be able to adequately represent your voice and what you need from the clinical community, from the FDA, and from MitoAction, and how we can best support you on your day-to-day journey. And that information is really critical for us to have. Well, Christy, thank you so much for sharing all of this incredible wisdom, right? And the goal is that we want to empower our patients and our caregivers and our community to take an active role in their journey and to help determine the outcomes, right? There's such an important role that every member of this community can play without being involved in a clinical trial, by just providing your information and understanding the disease and taking an active role with patient advocacy groups and replying to surveys and joining registries. There's so much you can do to really make a tremendous impact in the mitochondrial disease community. And we hope that you will join the MitoAction mailing list and get involved in the weekly support calls and reach out if you have ideas and thoughts. We want to hear from you, and we encourage you to do that so that you can take control of your journey.
Thank you so much for having me today, Kyra.
Thank you, Christy. We appreciate it, and we look forward to having you as a guest again. Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Energy in Action. Remember to give us a 5-star rating on your listening app. This helps to boost us up the charts and makes it easier for others to find us. You can find all of the links and details that we share today in the show notes or at mitoaction.org. Have a great day, and we look forward to having you join us next time.